Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Welcome, everybody, to the Irish Tech News Podcast. This is your host, Jamil Hassan, where I bring you the crypto corner, where I interview founders, thought leaders, entrepreneurs, artists globally. And today I have an amazing guest. His name is Sami Karim. He is with Binance. Sami, welcome to the show today.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. So I know you're a bit with business and ecosystem development at Binance, but I want to ask you, what is your background and is it a logical background for what you're doing now?
Yeah, sure. So I started off my career working on education reform projects for governments in the Middle East and working with private and public schools groups, as well as ministries of education, higher education, on supporting them on technology-driven education reform, and then later moved into enterprise software and solutions, particularly cloud HR, as well as a number of other areas. So I think in those roles, I was really talking to business leaders and technology leaders in large enterprises about new technologies. So sometimes a little bit disruptive for their normal ways of how they've been doing their businesses. So it was kind of like advising these leaders on driving change. So I think a lot of that experience has been very useful in my current role and what I've been doing recently in terms of driving change for a number of different industries by introducing new infrastructure for redesigning a lot of the way that either businesses or different industries have been working, whether that's in finance or music and entertainment or a number of other domains.
And you're also, I would say, a graduate or an alum of Consensus.
I was at Consensus for a little bit over 2 years. So I think yeah, Consensus was quite an interesting organization. They were responsible for building a lot of the tooling and infrastructure that DeFi and crypto users are using today, like MetaMask and Fura and a number of others. I think it was quite an interesting organization in that they had an amazing collection of people, innovators, like engineers, and that were really the early pioneers in building out the underlying infrastructure that you see being used heavily across Ethereum as well as other blockchains today. But they were also doing a lot of work in terms of driving how regulators were thinking about compliance, plus how the different industries and domains were looking at how to utilize blockchain and crypto technology in their specific sectors. So I think that was quite an interesting learning experience as well, because we were also doing a lot of advisory work besides software development and engineering. So advisory for different industries, a lot in financial services, but also healthcare, sports and entertainment, and a number of other retail and consumer focused businesses as well, around use case ideation, what type of use cases really make sense, and then also looking at technical architectures and scaling for specific use cases from a technology perspective.
Excellent, excellent. So, what was the greatest thing that you think you learned at Consensus, and what role has it played in supporting the projects that you're doing now at Binance Smart Chain?
I think it was several things. So, I think it was taking a holistic view on how to really define and evaluate use cases and whether they're suitable for achieving specific kind of objectives, how to design and develop and deploy those use cases, and then also looking at user scaling, which is also quite important there. So I think there's several areas that were very useful and critical in the kind of the role that I'm doing today. That was that the groups at Consensus were spending a lot of time and doing really well on.
Great. So I asked that because one of the criticisms of a Binance Smart Chain, and I want to ask you about that and about comparison and contrast to Ethereum, is that Binance Smart Chain is a centralized knockoff of Ethereum. That's the biggest criticism I've heard out there. Now, how does BSC compare and contrast to Ethereum in terms of speed, cost, use cases, and how do they stack up, really?
Yeah, that's a fair question. It's a good question. So I think the idea of BSC was really born out of experimentation that we were doing. So at the time, Ethereum network was having like kind of fairly regular congestion and resulted in high transaction fees for users, sometimes like $50 or $100 plus at its, just for the transaction fees. And there was also growing interest in DeFi. So this was like the DeFi summer V1, so summer 2020, when the whole yield farming thing was just getting started. So we were playing around with ideas around a smart contract infrastructure a little bit before that, because BSC is the second blockchain infrastructure that the Binance Chain team launched. The first one was the original, like the first Binance Chain, which is a Tendermint-based chain, but doesn't have the ability to run smart contracts. It was just purpose-built to run Binance DEX, which is the very high-speed, high-throughput on-chain order book DEX. But we did receive a lot of feedback from the community about developing a smart contract infrastructure that developers could build any type of application on top. So in the Binance Chain team, most of us were really Ethereum fans. So we were experimenting with different types of design ideas. And then we thought, because Ethereum by far has the largest developer adoption by a large margin, we thought we want to make it really easy for the Ethereum developer community to be able to build on it. So we forked the Go Ethereum, the Geth client, and changed the consensus, put in a new consensus mechanism, which was proof of stake authority. It's like a variation of delegated proof of stake. So the it's producing blocks faster, so producing blocks every 3 seconds compared to approximately every 13 seconds on the Ethereum mainnet, and also was significantly cheaper. At the time, we wanted it to be super low cost, which is kind of like the Binance style of building out products for users. So the transaction fees at the time were significantly cheaper, many multiples times cheaper. And for sure, we didn't really expect at that time that we were debating these design decisions that the transaction volume or usage will be anywhere near what was happening on the Ethereum mainnet at the time. So our early targets were like, we were thinking about like 30 to 50% of the transaction volume happening on Ethereum mainnet would be super successful in our minds at the time. So that was really the thinking behind it. It wasn't really about trying to like replace Ethereum. It was more like trying to provide an alternative. And for sure, we did know that we did sacrifice some level of decentralization to optimize for speed and also lower cost, because we also felt it was important for developers to have choice. So like today, developers have a lot of choice in terms of the type of networks that they can develop projects on, based on the needs of those specific projects. So if there's a particular use case or project that needs a maximally decentralized network, that's available today on the Ethereum mainnet. If developers want to experiment on infrastructure that's lower cost and can support larger user scaling, that's BSC among other choices as well. So that was really what the thinking was, to kind of do that. So I think from that perspective, BSC is complementary to Ethereum. It's like it's a part of that ecosystem. And today you have a large number of EVM chains that are kind of all in the same space, just providing more choice for users. And ultimately, I think it becomes kind of a situation where it's like countries, you know, so there's like people that choose to live in specific countries for different reasons, like the weather or whatever else it may be. And you have the same thing today. So you have like users that prefer using a particular EVM smart contract chain, whether that's BSC or something else, for whatever reasons, that it's either because their preferred DEXs are there. It might be due to the type of assets that they're able to get on the chain. It might be for many different reasons. So I think that kind of choice is really important, because without that, then I think we were going into a situation where especially for the DeFi ecosystem, starts to become less inclusive. Like, it's not really inclusive for all groups of users. It's inclusive for some groups of users which don't mind paying this very high premium for that level of maximal decentralization, but probably there are groups of users which don't mind sacrificing a little bit of that, like moving a bit away on that spectrum and getting cheaper fees to be able to access DeFi protocols, lending, and all the other types of things that they want to experiment. It's not only about DeFi as well. I think for BSC, it's really like a general purpose blockchain. So while there's a large DeFi ecosystem there, it's supporting like a variety of use cases, including gaming, NFTs, and a bunch of others.
So I'm going to ask you about milestones and some accomplishments. But first, I have to ask, I mean, I'm in the U.S., right? As 28-30% of our listeners are in the US, so they might not know too much about Binance Smart Chain, although they might have heard about Binance, right? So what does the lay of the land look like of where Binance Smart Chain has most of its users and applications? What's the geography look like first?
So it's really global, and that includes users in the US. So BSC is a public permissionless infrastructure. So it's accessible wherever there's an internet connection, right? So there's a lot of users globally, all over the world. And even for US users, I think accessibility is becoming increasingly easier. Recently, Binance US, the Binance.US exchange announced support for deposit and withdrawal of BEP20 assets. So users on Binance.us can move assets to and from quite easily from their Binance.us spot wallets. So even before that, there was quite a significant percentage of US users and adoption from US users on BSC. But the user distribution today is really global. It's North America, South America, all over Europe, all over Asia, Australia, like pretty much covers the entire globe at this point. I think BSC today has the largest number of users among any layer one or public permissionless blockchain by some distance. I think the recent data was the daily active addresses is the sum of all the other blockchains daily active addresses combined.
Great. So I'm glad you said that. So my question was this: recently, I think it was the mid-November, Binance Smart Chain hit a record-breaking milestone of ever. Let me see if I have this number right: 14.7 million blockchain transactions in a single day. How have you built the Smart Chain ecosystem up so to achieve, you know, that kind of impressive milestone?
Yeah, I think it's been pretty insane. So we had actually a day more recently, I think it was end of November, where the network managed 16.2 million transactions in a 24-hour period, which is pretty insane. I don't think we've really done anything genius to achieve that, to be honest. I think it was a number of factors. It was timing, it was things. So we were really just experimenting initially. We were in the early stages, focusing on ensuring the developer community had all the required infrastructure and tooling, and we were working very close and continue to work very closely with the developer community to ensure that the infrastructure and tooling requirements are being met, or we work on any gaps there, and then supporting projects and developers on both product development as well as user scaling, more importantly. And I think timing was also really fortunate. So we've been focusing a lot on infrastructure scaling to support the massive user growth that's happening on BSC, which is kind of like uncharted territory. I think we're really one of the first that's kind of supporting infrastructure at this level of usage for the very first time. So it's kind of challenging, but also exciting in that aspect. So I think we are working on a number of initiatives in terms of how we see the future of BSC evolving, which we believe will be multi-chain. We always believed in this multi-chain future in which there will be multiple base settlement layers that will have different architectures, that some of them will be more general purpose, some of them will be domain specific, that will have architectures that support specific use cases better than others. So for us, we see ourselves as being the infrastructure providers for crypto. That's really what we want to focus on. We want to provide the plumbing that crypto and developers use. And that's chain agnostic. It's like language agnostic, client agnostic. So right now, BSC is a Geth client that supports Solidity, but later we could launch chains that support different architectures, different languages, really based on developer demand. So wherever the developer demand is, we want to provide the infrastructure. We want to provide the infrastructure for that with a view of supporting, increasing and driving crypto adoption. That's the main objective for us.
I'll do a little comparison to Ethereum. Right now, Ethereum has a level two being built up. It's Polygon-matic is serving as that level two. Does Binance Smart Chain have a level two comparable system to Polygon-matic?
Not yet is the answer, but it's something that we are working on and probably going to be something that is available for the developer community to start experimenting with fairly soon. So in the short term, probably like within 6 months time. So the exact architecture of how that looks like is not fully defined yet, but it's something that we are working on and exchanging ideas with the core developer community as well as with the broader developer community. So it's kind of like ongoing work. We're actively engaging the developer community to get feedback and ideas on what that might look like.
Great, great, awesome. So looking at your long-term outlook, you know, for gas fees, right? Right now, gas fees are really high on Ethereum, you know, but for individual investors being able to navigate the crypto and be able to touch their main or minor or bags that they haven't been able to touch for a while, how do you navigate that space and make microtransactions affordable?
That's a very good question, because I think it's a super challenging area to tackle for many reasons. I think a lot of users on multiple chains have seen how it's difficult to sustain a very low cost over a period, like over that adoption curve for any chains. And also, of course, it's linked a lot to general market conditions, crypto asset prices and market conditions, because as the token that powers any specific network that's used for paying the transaction fees, if those are increasing significantly, obviously the prices for those are increasing significantly, the spot market prices, then obviously the users are paying higher fees there as well. Also, as adoption increases for any specific network, so does the network utilization. So, and also on the other side, block space becomes more scarce, and that also drives up the transaction fees. So it's kind of a question that's more linked to network scaling, especially for EVM architectures, which I think is still an area of active research and development. I think there's not really a clear consensus on which approach is best for scaling. There are, I think there are some architectures like that are gaining more traction right now and that do seem to have good solutions right now that will be battle tested soon, but we're definitely not there yet. So I think it's still an area that will continue to require a lot of efforts and work by the broader community before we reach a sustainable solution around how can we really scale to hundreds of millions of users and eventually a billion users and still have architectures that are inclusive and affordable for all groups of users. I think there the important part is that there's going to be many different networks, like a network of networks, that will have a high level of interoperability, cross-chain communication, as well as cross-chain applications beyond just wrapped assets, so like real cross-chain messaging, that will have also different levels of decentralization and in turn also different levels of transaction fees. So ultimately, I think that's the really key thing is that users should have choice and different venues and infrastructures they can use based on the types of fees and requirements and preferences that they have. So I think the critical part there is really the choice for developers and users.
So how do you see decentralized Oracle networks playing a role?
Definitely is very important. So I think oracles play a very critical role across a number of different domains. For sure, in DeFi are super critical, like a foundational infrastructure. So very highly secure, highly scalable Oracle networks are like kind of foundational infrastructure for DeFi, but also super important in a number of other areas, especially gaming and others where verifiable randomness is also a very critical requirement that's currently being provided by the Oracle network. So definitely Oracle networks and there as well, I think pricing, accessibility, scalability for those networks are also critical and serve as foundational infrastructure for the development of applications on crypto infrastructure.
So the part I'm struggling with understanding is that as more utilization is happening, right, in these networks, you would think logically the price per transaction would go down, but they're going up because the scaling is still an issue?
Yeah, so it's a little bit counterintuitive because you don't really get any kind of economies of scale with decentralized networks a lot. So it's basically as the network resources become increasingly utilized, the way that utilization is kind of those network resources are managed is by kind of fair pricing mechanisms in that market. So as there's less resources, as there's more transactions on the network, more users on the networks, and those network resources become more scarce, they become more expensive. And the way that that's priced is really by the transaction fees, the gas fees on the particular network. So when there are other factors, of course, that impact it. So like for a network like BSC, transaction fees are denominated in BNB. So if BNB price is $650 or thereabouts where it is today, then obviously that has an impact, direct impact on the transaction fees because the gas is denominated in BNB. So similar for other networks as well. So there are other factors that impact that, but for sure, network utilization is another key factor.
It is counterintuitive, so I want to make sure that my my listeners don't get confused, right? So, in terms of, so we're moving, so you mentioned DeFi, right? So let's talk about DeFi a little bit. What's the outlook for Binance Smart Chain with DeFi and the fact that most of the BSC ecosystems, you know, I would say they don't seem to be off limits to U.S. investors. Well, they have been, Binance has been off limits to U.S. investors. But how does you, how do you see DeFi playing out on the Binance Smart Chain?
Yeah, yeah. Good, very good question. So I think one of the first domains to really grow significantly was the DeFi ecosystem on BSC. And I think there was a number of factors that were super attractive for both users as well as developers. Of course, transaction fees and block speed were one of them, but also I think it was the type of assets that you find on BSC today. So you got a lot of different wrapped assets that aren't really found in the Ethereum developer ecosystem. So stuff like XRP and Litecoin and so many others that DeFi developers have for the first time kind of ability to test market demand for in DeFi protocols, whether it's lending, borrowing, or decentralized derivatives venues, or whatever it may be. So in terms of how the DeFi ecosystem is evolving, I think we've continued to see significant user growth and interest there. So the lending and borrowing, the DEX landscape, as well as the DeFi 2.0 protocols and more advanced designs around liquidity and other areas of innovation in the DeFi space continue to grow quite rapidly on BSC for sure. But it's also a very attractive environment for DeFi developers generally, I think mainly driven by the large number of users there. So if you look at some examples like PancakeSwap, for example, they regularly go to the number one lists on 24-hour trading volume, but they're far, far ahead in terms of the number of users compared to all other DEXs and DeFi protocols. I think in terms of all of the dApps in crypto, they're number two only behind Axie Infinity. So that aspect, I think, is super attractive for a lot of DeFi developers to be able to build out projects there and have very significant user scaling. But we also do see a lot of innovation happening in the BSC DeFi ecosystem as well, with new designs around lending, borrowing, derivatives, and other areas as well.
So you said a couple of things there, and I got to ask about it, because for clarity, I mentioned DeFi, and you said wrapped XRP and wrapped Litecoin. The first I heard of it. But yeah. How are you wrapping those two?
So Binance.com acts as a excellent bridge for connecting all of these different networks. I call it a bridge, but it's not really a bridge. We'll describe it more like a custodial cross-chain swap service. So users, of course, this is only accessible for users that have a Binance.com account in supported regions. But for those users, they can withdraw quite a large and growing list of assets that includes XRP, Litecoin, Bitcoin Cash, so many. Almost any asset that's listed on Binance.com can be wrapped on and issued as a Binance Peg wrapped asset on BSC. And that list of assets is quite large today and continues to grow quite rapidly. So that's the kind of super interesting aspect for a lot of DeFi developers, is being able to use these type of assets in DeFi protocols and really test market demand, which was kind of the first time that has happened, because a lot of these assets are not really found in the Ethereum DeFi ecosystem, mainly because there aren't issuers that are focused on issuing these wrapped assets on the Ethereum DeFi ecosystem yet.
Right. Interesting. So we talked about DeFi, about NFTs. How are the NFTs being built on Binance Smart Chain?
That's a good question as well. So I think the NFT landscape on BSC continues to grow and evolve really rapidly. We're seeing some areas where there's a lot more traction and adoption compared to others. I think for sure the gaming space is one of them. We've seen very significant growth in the gaming and GameFi space on BSC with very significant user traction, very significant user growth. And of course, the NFTs play a fundamental role in those games. Most of the games are kind of built around NFTs and using them in different ways. There's a lot of like fighting games and almost every category of games like really well served in the BSC ecosystem. So from that aspect, I think NFT growth on BSC has been very significant, but we're also seeing a number of other domains that are leveraging NFTs a lot, especially the digital arts, but also in sports and entertainment, brands, as well as music related use cases. So there's a number of different areas, but I think the one today that really stands out in terms of growth and adoption is in the gaming space for sure. And just based on the level of developer activity that's happening and that we have visibility on, which is not all of it for sure, we see that the growth of gaming on the BSC ecosystem and NFTs linked with that is going to continue to grow very rapidly over the coming months.
Awesome. Yeah, every time I think I know the space, I learn something new and like my mind gets like, you know, expands, you know. So I want to thank you for that. It's been a real honor speaking with you and learning today. I have one last question. How can people find out more information about you, about Binance Smart Chain, about what you do? How can they start to learn that?
Yeah, there's a couple of places. So I think for the community and listeners that want to keep up to date with what's happening in the BSC ecosystem more generally, come and follow us on Twitter. It's at Binance Chain is our Twitter handle. You can also follow us on our blog. So our site is binance.org, where you can get access to a lot of great information about what's happening in the BSC ecosystem. And then for listeners that are interested in following me on LinkedIn is the place to find me as well as on Twitter.
Awesome. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks for having me on. It was great fun.
Thank you for listening to the latest Irish Tech News podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter at Irish_Tech News, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.